change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai, speaking today with Emily Hicks Rotella, a conversation I've been looking forward to for a while now. Emily is a nonprofit data and tech strategist. Emily, how are you?
I'm doing well this morning. Thanks, Mickey. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
I can't wait to get into this. I love technology and nonprofits. There's clearly always going to be a lot to talk about. Do you think in general that nonprofits just struggle with technology in the way that for-profits don't? And I realize that's a trick question, but let me ask it anyway.
Right. And I think there's plenty of for-profits struggling with their tech as well. They just have a lot more examples of where they can excel too. Right. I think there have been some great papers that come out each year that show that there's a lot of room for growth for nonprofits using both their data and their technology.
Right. So in other words, what do you think are the major pitfalls that nonprofits face in this? I mean, I remember being involved in the technology nonprofit sector back in the early 2000s. And in those days, in some cases, it was, at that time, it was still getting nonprofits to come away from green screen. Right. And what do you think are the current challenges for nonprofits these days?
Oh, OK. That's big. Great. Big questions. I love them. And when you bring up like early 2000s, I actually think of a really large national nonprofit that I was working with later, but they were still doing thousands of paper applications to their program in the early 2000s. And it was a true joy to be at the offices when we were starting to really say we can let go of this or shred and whatever, and we've moved digital.
Yes.
So that actually can highlight one of the challenges, which is change. Change is hard. And you want to take change in a change management sense for whatever is changing in its due time and give it all the attention that change management deserves. Mm-hmm. And pair that with technology that changes at a pace that doesn't usually allow us to take that time. So that's a big challenge. And in the nonprofit sector, you know, maybe you've experienced this. There's programmatic change, there's funding change, it's all coming at the same time. So I definitely think change management is a big challenge with data and tech for most nonprofits.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually, absolutely. And things in technology just seem to change very quickly, or at least the availability of certain tools and, you know, the ready use of data and how to use the data. And there's always plenty of things to talk about and learn. But let's start with one of the topics that you sent in your notes to me, which is choosing a tech system. That doesn't mean PC versus Mac, does it?
I guess it could, although I wasn't thinking that, but I'll have to out myself as a PC head. I just love PCs since I was so Excel based for so long. But I see a lot of nonprofits switching over to Macs. Or just enjoying them more. But you're right. That wasn't the top thing on my mind in talking about that. And it was very integral with this change management conversation that tech changes. And so every 3 to 5 years, you'll probably have to look at the system you're in and say, what's already changed about it? Or are we still fitting into it for how we have changed as an organization? And you may have to do so much to that system to upgrade it that it feels like almost like testing a new system, taking on a new system. Or you'll really say, this doesn't fit our needs anymore. Even the company itself, the vendor itself could be going under, deprecating, could have been sold to another vendor. So you'll have to choose a tech system throughout the course of your organization's lifespan. And it can feel like a big investment. And in many cases, it can be a big investment. Sure. So there's a lot of obstacles, challenges. But I think that there are also a lot of really great examples of how to go about choosing tech systems from all the way from, you know, looking at your systems that you currently have, seeing what your programs and what your needs are as an organization, and then using that to look at your available choices.
Right. You talk about it in terms of being a large investment. We have continued to talk about change. Do you think there's some reluctance in the idea that you should spend a lot of money on something that's just eventually going to change anyway?
I would like to think that that attitude is changing as we go forward. Yes. So I still see a lot of resistance there and with many good reasons for putting up that resistance. Mm-hmm. But I also see a lot of organizations and individuals within those organizations, from staff members to the executive directors to the board members, starting those conversations about how important the technology and data investment can be. And that's not just in the tech system we're talking about, which is a really an integral part, obviously, but also in their professional development for their staff within these skills and knowledge sets. They are starting to see the trend of business in general, the trend of nonprofit, the trend of donor requirements for data, and saying that not only do we need this because we're being asked to provide information and we see others doing it, and that's a pretty good benchmark too, but because we want to know as much as we can about how we are making our way towards our mission. And I think that is the most important part when you are saying to yourself, how can I possibly invest? You know, what can I take out of my budget? How can I raise money for data and tech investment?
So it sounds like those are the questions you might actually start with to design that ecosystem for the organization.
Certainly. Right. I think so. First and foremost, you know, how is this serving our mission? And mm-hmm. there might not be a direct line. You might have to go through a couple of layers from your Excel spreadsheets to your students that you're serving. Right. But being able to make that line, however it is, and to ask that question is key at the beginning and throughout your analysis of your tech ecosystem, and then eventually choosing new systems. That's one of them. I'm sure you've asked in your time also just a couple of important questions around this, if any come to mind for you too.
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm thinking of one board experience in particular where, you know, we had stellar financials and yet they didn't really, at the time, early on, they didn't really track how those line items in the budget really translated into outcomes. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a hard thing for a lot of nonprofits to try to track. In some cases, the outcomes are, okay, we're going to measure people's attitudes about the way they relate to their environment. And that's not really a quantifiable thing, right? Anyway, I'm hoping is that what you're thinking?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's questions around the key metrics mm-hmm. for your organization, from the organization level down to each individual team and team members, you know, key metrics mm-hmm. for their work and how those all relate to your goals and your mission in the end, of course. I think the question about what do we need to know, right? Very simply, key metrics, we could say in a different way. What do we need to know? What will tell us if we're moving towards our mission? What information do we need to answer that question? So how can we collect and track that data? And then what systems will be useful for both inputting that, organizing it, and getting it out so that we can have insights. And it sounds maybe like a simple linear kind of path, but it ends up with multiple technology systems. There's never one that will serve most all needs in many cases.
And that dovetails right into the next point that you sent to me, which was you said that no system will address everything. So recognizing that there are going to be workarounds and improvements you'll want in the future, how do I keep that on the top of my mind when I'm making these selections? You know, recognizing that there's going to be workarounds and improvements. Can you give me an example of what that looks like?
Sure. So on the high level, I just want to say that I think many organizations have the skills to do this because they're looking at their programs or their development campaigns in the same way. They're saying, do I have what I need to get to where I want? So just need to turn that eye onto their data and tech. And I think the kind of sub questions that might come out of that would be, all right, if I really need some metrics that my system doesn't display to me right away, right? They don't have good dashboards, something like that. Do I need to do a whole search for an entire new system to take in that data? Or if that's already working, can I work through a manual process maybe at first to export the data into an Excel sheet and build some dashboards there? And then after you do that potentially, and that goes well and you get some questions and answers from that work, is there a way to automate that? Can I use, you know, a big thing now, APIs. Can I use APIs to automate the pulling of data out of my systems instead of having to click the download button right. once a week? So I really enjoy the process of starting at the most simple possible way, right? If I had to, Occam's razor, what's the simplest answer here to my issue, all the way up to like redesigning, you know, your technology roadmap and your whole ecosystem. Yeah. It's good to look at all of those, I think.
Right. I feel like we should take a step back and talk about what a tech system is. You know, we're talking about choosing a tech system. And clearly we're not choosing Mac versus PC, but are we talking about software? Are we talking about the actual infrastructure in the office? What is that? Yeah. When you say tech system, if you were to stand in front of a potential client and say, we need to talk about your tech system, what is it that they're thinking about?
When it's with me, it's definitely not hardware. That's just not my specialty or my area of expertise. But I really appreciate all of the people who have that knowledge set, who have taught me over the years the little tips and tricks. And I'll just say, I'm sure everyone's heard this before, but truly, like 80% of the time, turning it off and turning it back on again will solve your issue. So don't feel bad if you have to go to that. And Vicky, you can feel free to edit this out later, but I'll just say here that that's one of the reasons that I run a little challenge for nonprofit folks about shutting down your computer for 5 days, only to get people maybe a little more used to being able to shut down and turn it back on.
But it's so true. I can't help but laugh. It's so true. Like the majority of problems disappear if you just restart your machine.
Exactly. Yeah. So when I use the term tech system, and I think it's great that you point out that that's pretty ambiguous at this point. I probably could define my language, refine it a little more, but I am definitely thinking software and the combination of softwares as an ecosystem. And then what we kind of touched on, the connections between those softwares. I also sometimes will use the word like tools in that same sense. Like this is your tool for connecting with your donors. This is your tool for tracking your impact, things like that. But I think software is the right technical term.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, we weren't saying to people that, oh, you need to all have Dell computers and they all need to have Excel on them and they all need, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Everyone should have Excel and you should learn Excel. Honestly, and this isn't a question you asked, but I'll put it out there anyway, that many tech systems, softwares, like vendors that you see anywhere where you log in, you know, with a username and password on the internet. There are many out there that are saying that their user interfaces are so user-friendly, so simple, so beautiful that anyone without any knowledge should be able to use them and use them with joy. And I love the promise of that, but I have found often that people still struggle, even with easiest user interfaces. And one of the key things I have found is that without feeling some confidence and knowledge about what's driving that beautiful UI and how everything looks in the background, there's a lot of questions that come up and people are, maybe there's even a sense of embarrassment or fear to ask those questions because you've been sold on, it's so easy and beautiful, anyone can do it. And I say that to follow up my comment that everyone should have Excel, because I actually believe that knowledge in Excel can be used as an analogy, at least for understanding a lot of what's going on in the back of the user interface.
Absolutely. Excel is like the original rudimentary database. It's just, absolutely.
Yeah. And you think of something like, you know, a beautiful system that it doesn't look like a database,
right?
A learning management system, right? Yeah. It really doesn't look like a database, but there's a lot of database behind it.
Sure. Oh yeah, absolutely. In your notes, you talk about longevity and consistency with systems. Can we talk a little more about that?
Yes. And I was just telling you before we started that I'm actually talking about this very topic in the context of ethics around data and technology. This has come up quite a bit. And it goes to our conversation about pace of change. You have an investment and it's not just financial. It's human capacity. It's training. Turnover, you know, is touching on that. It is trust. It is a relationship with your technology. You put a lot into that when you invest in a technology. Process too. There's a lot of other things in your work that are probably built around processes that touch on your tech systems.
Yep.
So it's important, certainly, with to have consistent consistency in those areas and in your data collection, to think about longevity and sustainability. At the same time, you have to hold in the same breath, tech changes, your program changes, your staff changes, changes all around us. So I don't think you can really be on one end or the other and say, like, we only invest in technologies that will last us for 5 to 10 years, or we only do 1 year contracts because we know that there's no flexibility and we don't ask the same questions year over year because things change and that's just the way it is. There needs to be somewhere in the middle.
Sure.
And on this topic of ethics, if you're looking at the values of your organization and what you think is most important to help move towards your mission, that could help you in those decisions to say, in this instance, you know, do I need a 1 year contract or do I need a 3 year contract?
Right. And I think it's important to point out that we're talking about change over the course of years and not months. Like, I'm not going to make an investment at the start of my fiscal calendar that's going to require a complete overhaul by the end of that same year. But I mean, change is rapid, but it's not so turbulent. Would you agree or not agree?
Oh, I've seen examples.
Okay.
There may be some like best practices about trying to at least have that for a year. And certainly around like human ability to manage so many differences. Right. And I always pull up in my mind memories. Nobody really says this anymore, but I pull the memory up of people coming in and saying like, oh, Facebook changed and I'm so upset. Like, I don't like how the look of it changed. Right. I don't think they really changed that much anymore, I guess, but that's the feeling I got around that I try to keep with me. So I think a benchmark maybe of like, try, if you're going to pilot something, if you're not sure what your end like need is and you want to try some things out before you get there, piloting for a year is probably a nice way to do it. Gives you a lot of time to build feedback loops where possible. And it probably aligns technologically, like with contracts, with fiscal year budgets, things like that.
Right. I was going to split out the other topics you sent into different episodes, but I think it makes sense just to keep rolling and to talk about this extra topic as it may relate to choosing a tech system. And that next topic is why data and technology is essential to have in-house and how to get it in-house. I feel like there's sort of a natural segue between those two. What do you think?
Sure. Absolutely.
So let's hit on that. What do you mean? Why would I not want to farm out my data stuff? Why is it important to keep it in-house?
Yeah. Again, another place potentially for a healthy balance. If we take it outside of data and technology and you would ask someone working in nonprofit, is knowledge management important to you? Like, do you want to have knowledge of your programs in-house? Do you want to have knowledge of your donors in-house? It kind of comes naturally. You'd say, yeah. What other way could I possibly have it? But there's certainly many skilled, intelligent people outside of your house, you're a nonprofit, that you could hire as consultants to do similar work. There is something special about the organization and the team members coming together and saying we're in it in this way. But more practically, there is turnover in-house, and it's important that the knowledge that would be about programming or anything else that touches your data and technology is consistent and doesn't have to just live with any one person. And it's even more clear than when you talk about out-of-house knowledge like a consultant. So I'm a consultant. I don't work in-house in any single nonprofit. And I think it's absolutely integral that when you leave a project, when you leave a nonprofit, which is hard to do if you're really in it with their mission, that you feel confident that everything you put into that is going to keep going. Everything that you worked on with them is going to keep going and keep serving their mission. If you believe you worked with them to build processes and tools that are serving their mission. So you're going to leave eventually if you're a consultant, and there's no way those tech systems and processes continue without a human person loving them,
right.
or liking them. This is where like a great conversation about relationship with technology and say the ethics of automation and how much you want to automate could come into the topic. But it's certainly my belief that having a certain love for technology and data that lives within a nonprofit's culture is a key factor in having a successful data and tech addition or support to furthering the mission.
Right. So keep it part of the culture and have a dedicated role specifically for this purpose.
I have seen the most success with mm-hmm. dedicated roles for this purpose. And it's so amazing how many people are able to step up and say, sure, I can wear this many hats. I can be director of development and our IT person. I can, you know, do all of this. I am really floored by how much, you know, people working for something that they love and believe in can do. But I think it's time that, and people are accepting this, that the amount that technology and data supports and runs in some cases our work deserves full-time human attention.
Say that one more time.
That the amount to which data and technology are integrated into the work of nonprofits, supporting the work towards their mission and sometimes driving it, deserves the capacity of a full-time human being employee.
Yeah. I asked you to repeat that because I think that's really critically important. You know, when your work, the record of your work is wrapped up in your data, that's super important, right? That's like central to almost everything you do. So, so thank you. Thank you for repeating that.
Sure. Thank you for asking. Yeah. It's kind of a fun exercise to do, kind of zooming in and zooming out on these things, because you can get very practical, right? You could just say it's your money. Your donors are asking for this. Grants ask for this. You will lose out on this money, and money allows you to do your work. So we could get very practical, and then we can go back to the more like ephemeral, you know, connection to the mission, which is incredibly important, even though it's a little bit harder to wrap your arms around.
Right, right. The next thing that you spoke of in your notes here, I think, is also critically important for all nonprofit employees, not just the tech folks, but professional development. Let's touch on that a little bit. I like the phrase you used, commitment to a learning culture. So it's not just software focused, right? We're actually talking about building nonprofits that have a culture dedicated to professional development for, in my world, that's everybody, not just the data people. But what would you say?
I think you're right. I tend to focus in my examples on data and tech CD, sure. But at an organization I was working at, I was managing the online learning technology that we were using. So I was really fortunate to be introduced to technology that helps manage learning culture. You know, we were providing professional development for people not working in our organization. But once you're kind of in that online learning world, you get exposed to a lot of internal PD conversation as well. And there's so much opportunity now for different kinds of professional development that match different needs and different learners. So the idea of learning culture just sort of comes up naturally in those conversations as well. You're saying, what's the best way to provide online learning? And do you have support? Do you have the time to do it from your managers? And is it in your performance reviews to review your professional development? So all the culture around that does come up. And I agree that learning culture is part of the organization. And there's maybe a Venn diagram where the data and tech comes. But I think data and technology, like feeling confident in data and technology, is almost a baseline need for citizens, at least in this country, whatever you're doing. And it's very important when I think of the people working in nonprofit, because the stakes to me are just that much higher. You're working to really solve the key problems of our lifetimes.
Right. That's right. Does that kind of education have to be expensive? I mean,
yes, if we are talking about time and energy, sometimes it can be expensive depending on what you need to learn, how fast you need to learn it. But in terms of money, no, I don't think it needs to be expensive. I say that only because that, you know, I don't think I've taken a paid course that is designed around data and technology, other than some computer science credits I got in grad school. And
no kidding.
Yeah. And the learning that got me to this place, on the job learning, and like, you know, at the beginning, hours of Googling and trying to find my way in this and get mentors in it, time and energy. So that's why my mind jumps right to that when we think of expense for this learning.
Right. Right. Are you going to N10?
I am going to N10. I am very, very excited to see how they are going to run their virtual conference, since they've had more than 2 weeks to plan a totally new virtual experience for their people.
Yeah, no, I need to visit N10 at some point, but I don't think I'm gonna check into the virtual conference this year. But you've described that as the best bang for your buck in terms of getting exposure to not only professional development, but exposure to new things and new systems and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it has been for me. And if I wanted to name, you know, a few other great opportunities, there's Good Tech Fest. That's a wonderful place to be. Even I mentioned I was in online learning. I've been to the Learning Solutions by the eLearning Guilds conference. That's a lot of online learning and a lot of technology there. That's also wonderful. But it really stands out amongst great conferences. The nonprofit technology conference that's put on by N10 is a place where really strong relationships are built, I think, and the most thoughtful amount of planning is put into the programming. And it's very community driven. And on top of that, I find the mix of people coming from the nonprofit sector is so helpful. There's a lot of people who are maybe the program officer who just happens to like technology and is there because they're the person that the organization said, okay, great, you're willing to run with this, go, you're going to be our tech person. So when you're having sessions, and questions come up, whether it's about technology or like process change management, you get such a wealth of experience and varied background that come to that discussion.
Right. Right. And the last topic here that I think it's important to hit on, because we're talking about culture, and culture is always about relationships. And the one thing you said, which I thought was pretty poignant, which is everyone learns tech differently. Why is that relevant?
Well, I'm going to guess that anyone listening to this has had deep experience with this over the last 8 months about learning differently than maybe they had before. Because no matter the change in your life that's happened during this time, even if you weren't taking an online course or you weren't in college or you weren't doing PD at the time, you were learning in some way, right? You were learning from your colleagues and being in person with them. There's all these different, you know, experiences that add to that learning culture. Right. So that's something has changed for you, and you've probably had to review how you like to learn, if that's something, you know, that's important to you. It's also important because, you know, I think in the nonprofit world, we say this, that we're trying to reach our constituents where they are. I don't think there's a lot of nonprofits now that pride themselves on saying like, we have the answers. We're going to come into a community and plop our answers down and we're sure it will work. Just trust us. Right. We want community feedback. We want to get people involved in their own programming. And to me, it's the same with learning. That's where you find long lasting impact, deep transformation. When the people who are have maybe some knowledge, skill, money, whatever resources, and the people who have community engagement and are just living in the situation, when they come together to build programs that change whatever is needed to be changed or addresses an issue, that's where long-lasting transformation happens. So in learning, I think it's the same. If you are just a teacher, or a speaker that's just giving information, some people can get that and that's great, but others need to be involved in their learning in a different way.
Right. And there's so many opportunities that are out there. The question is just pick the ones that you feel are the right for you.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. I think that's, it's very helpful to have all those opportunities now. And sometimes it may take that learning culture to get to that ability of someone to take advantage of all those opportunities. So mm-hmm. I think in a really positive learning culture, there is a keen eye to those on the job experiences, the practical learning that could help someone advance in their skills, or just the relationship between team members and managers and direct reports. Those are all opportunities for learning, and a strong learning culture will look at all of those and make decisions to try to enhance the learning in those opportunities.
Right. Emily, awesome stuff. And I feel like we're just scratching the surface, but we're out of time. If a listener wanted to be in touch with you with more questions about tech systems and you know, learning cultures and getting their data in-house, how would you suggest they get in touch with you?
Ooh, my favorite topics. They should definitely get in touch. So my company is called Make Tech Work For You, because I can't make it work for you. You have to make it work for you. And I have the website maketechworkforyou.com, or just my first name, Emily@maketechworkforyou.com.
Awesome. Thank you. I love the subject matter, Emily, and I'm looking forward to our next episode. Thank you for joining me for this recording today.
Same. Thanks so much, Mickey.
To our listeners, thank you as always for joining us. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating via whatever mechanism you use to listen to the Snapcast. Your 5-star ratings make us more findable by search engines, and we are grateful to you for helping us grow our audience. In the meantime, we'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.